discuss race and how it plays a factor, and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
So tonight we're going to get into what everyone is talking about, but few are willing to confront.
And here's what we're breaking down live tonight.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk about why DEI didn't stick. Not because the ideas were wrong, but because the truth behind them made people uncomfortable.
Before we start with that, we're going to have a quick conversation with Grace Food and Corey about perspective, leadership, and about her new show on BEP.
Absolutely. And then we're going to break down, as I talked about earlier, a powerful clip interview with Katie Couric and Brian Stevenson that cuts straight to the real reason why DEI failed.
So truth, accountability, and leadership, that's where we're headed tonight. So buckle up.
Absolutely. So first, let's bring in a good friend of ours and now somebody that's part of the BEP family, Grace Food and Curry. She is the new host starting in January of a new podcast that will be featured here on a Black Executive Perspective podcast titled A Mixed Executive Perspective, which will be starting in January 14th of 2026. Grace, my sister, welcome to BEP Live.
So good to be here.
Well, definitely welcome to the family. We are introducing you here, but we are reintroducing you to people who have probably seen you in the platform before, and we're more than excited to have you. Give us a little bit, for those who don't know, you know, the fabulous Grace Food and Corey, about yourself, your background, and things of that nature in your leadership journey.
Sure. So I'm mixed, and my father was white and Jewish, and my mother was as black as night. And they met in the 1940s, and that was a long time ago, to be an interracial couple, and they had their trials and tribulations. My dad was, you know, he was on a hunger strike and prison for trying to integrate a nightclub. And so they had their children really late in life. They were really early activists. So by the time the 60s came around, they were already kind of, you know, phasing out of it. They had like led the early days of it. But so I grew up with a really different kind of upbringing where this was the norm to be mixed. The housing co-op I grew up in, that was all mixed race people of various combinations. So it was a really unusual childhood.
And so would that inspire you to do a mixed perspective, you know, podcast, a mixed executive perspective podcast? What was it about that, do you think, led your foray into leadership and some of the career aspirations that you have? Or did that play any part in what you chose to do in your real world?
Actually, not at all. I mean, my parents would have wanted me to be an activist and an educator and helping people. And I did none of that. I wanted to be a designer and make money and, okay, you know, live a certain kind of life. And, you know, I'm just who I am. So I did me.
So what did you get into?
Yeah. So I went to Parsons School of Design and I got a degree in fashion design. My dad asked, what am I going to do with that degree? And I said, everyone I know wears clothes, so I think I'll be okay. I'll figure it out. But he still doubted it for a long time. And eventually he came around and I hear he never told me directly that he was really proud of me.
And then so, Grace, just so everybody's on the same page, talk a little bit about your career, though, right? Because your title of your show is A Mixed Executive Perspective. So talk about the executive part. Where did that come from?
Yeah. So after 10 years, as I kind of worked my way up through the design thresholds up to a senior design director, I finally moved on to the merchandising side, which is really more the business of fashion, and became a senior vice president at a large company running multiple brands. And I was the only, for sure, I was the only.
Well, and I would imagine so, right? Just to be fair, okay? However, you know, when you came on a Black Executive Perspective podcast, you shared your story. I believe it was in in September of this year, and it was one of our biggest episodes that we had on our platform. You did a really, really great job. So I want to share a quick little clip. Justin, you spoke a little bit about it here, just a little bit about your background and a little bit about what you went through in terms of or growing up in a family that was mixed. And we're talking early, you know, 1940s and 1950s.
My father was white and Jewish. My mother was a very dark-skinned Black woman. They met in as civil rights activists in the 1940s. So this was before it was cool. Things happened, like my father was in jail on a hunger strike for one of the events that they did at a nightclub trying to integrate it. Wow. And then in 1950, they, with a bunch of other very educated, mostly multiracial couples, started a housing co-op that they got financed. And their whole purpose was to change the perception of Black and mixed race people moving into your neighborhood. Instead of there goes the neighborhood, it was like, we're bringing the neighborhood up.
So I love that, right? So talk a little bit about why did you want to start this podcast? You know, again, you shared your story and it blew up. I mean, people were so enamored. You were very authentic, very vulnerable, and you touched a nerve with a lot of people. So talk a little bit, because you didn't have to do this, right? To be fair, you came on the show and that was it. So why now are you taking it to the next step to start your podcast?
You know, I realized because it touched so many people and because it was something I had suppressed for so long, that now is the time to bring it out. You know, if people are hungering for this, and I'm excited to tell my story and my experiences, you know, there can't be a better time than this. Even with everything going on in the world, you know, there can't be a better time than this.
And then, so what will people gain by watching and listening to your show on a weekly basis? What is the audience going to get by you sharing your story and talking about what you've been through?
I'm going to talk about leadership, identity, survival in this really, really polarized world that we're in right now. And I'll be speaking from my personal experience, you know, what I've been through. I mentor young people today. So what I see is a lot of through line, you know, of what I went through. Everyone thinks it's gone. No, it's not. They're experiencing the exact same things. And, you know, by having this conversation, this is the beginning of helping it to start to dissipate some of these things that have been pent up inside ourselves for so long and not spoken about.
Well, look, my sister, I'm excited about this. You know, Grace came, she was part of the BEP Podcast Academy, where she was able to come in and hone her skills. And so we're very excited that you're going to be launching this within the BEP network. This is going to launch January 14th of 2026, a mixed executive perspective. And so we're excited. And this is like a little appetizer by you coming on BEP Live, right? Because you know what we talk about on this platform is about all the things that's happening in the world today that most people will shy away from. So are you ready? So you're going to give the audience a little taste of what a mixed executive perspective is about. So are you ready to join this conversation tonight?
Oh, yeah. I am. I'm all in. Let's do it.
All right. Let's dive into it.
All right. We're very excited. So what Grace is talking about is honesty, context, and perspective. And it sets the stage for why DEI became so fragile when the truth entered the room.
Yeah. So one of the things that we wanted to do tonight, you know, DEI, let's be fair here, okay, is that there's been a narrative that's been pushed out. And the narrative, to be fair, is a narrative to divide people, to make it seem that Black people, people of color, women are getting advantages and being put in positions that they're not qualified for, right? They're getting a free lunch. They're getting a handout, right? And to be fair, we know that's not true. okay? And we got, it's just, look, I've been in corporate America 30 something years. That's not true. These jobs are hard to get, okay? Just to even get an opportunity for an interview, right? But that doesn't matter, because once a narrative is pushed out and it's projected across media, across everything, and we know the majority of Americans, and this is not just knocking anybody in terms of intellect, is that they're living their lives, right? They're tied up. They're trying to take care of their families. They're working, trying to pay their own bills. So when you start hearing things, 9 times out of 10, people are not going to check nothing out. They're going to hear it. And then if they keep hearing it over and over and over again, they end up buying it. It must be true. All right. And so that's the issue. So today, and then we had a new administration come in. Yep. And from January 20th, okay, they've even increased the narrative and the bullhorn, I should say. Unfortunately, we had a plane crash. The dog whistle. Thank you, bro. We had a plane crash with a military chopper and a commercial jet. Right. First thing, instead of saying, "Hey, we're sorry, these people, our condolences," yep. None of that. Right. First thing, this must be DEI. All right. And so now we've had mayors, the mayor of Baltimore. All right. When the cargo bridge. Ship hit the bridge, right? First thing is he's the DEI mayor, okay? So otherwise, he ain't qualified or she ain't qualified, okay, to run or to have this position. And just a narrative, again, that most people don't understand. So today, we wanted to break down an interview that Katie Couric had with Brian Stevenson, all right? And we feel that this is something... very important in terms of providing truth and clarity in terms of not just why DEI existed and why it was started, but just the history, I should say, of what people of color have gone through and why certain things were enacted. And then more importantly, why they failed. And it wasn't because it wasn't a great thought. It was because of the lack of leadership and the uncomfortability that a lot of people had to deal with versus the truth. But just to give you a quick little sense of Brian Stevenson, and a lot of you people may know him because he wrote the book, which became a movie, Just Mercy, okay, a story of justice and redemption. But Brian Stevenson is a lawyer, social justice activist, law professor at the New York University School of Law, and the founder of the executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative, okay? So what Brian has been doing for years is helping people who end up in death row or end up with different type of convictions, getting those convictions overturned based on evidence, DEI, so people who were railroaded and stuff to that nature. That's why he wrote the book, Just Mercy, A Story of Justice and Redemption. Right. So Katie interviewed him about a month or so ago to get his feedback on what's going on with DEI. So we're going to dive into it. And look, we just broke up a couple of clips. So we recommend that you go to her platform, check out, and you can watch the full interview in its entirety. But we wanted to bring the clarity and the history that he talked about in his interview and then provide our perspectives as well. So let's dive. You guys ready to dive into this?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Excited. All right, let's dive in.
What the hell is going on? And I really have been looking forward to talking to you and almost having a therapy session with you, if you will.
Well, I think your question frames the moment we're in really perfectly. Throughout most of American history, we have been silent about the harms of our history, about all of the damage that was done, about the false narratives that we embraced to justify the displacement of millions of Native people when Europeans arrived. You know, there were millions of indigenous peoples here before Europeans arrived. We wanted their land. We wanted this. And so even though we created a constitution that talked about equality and liberty and justice for all, we didn't apply those concepts to Native people. We instead created this narrative of racial difference. And I think that was like an infection that took root in America. And behind that kind of misguided narrative where we said that Native people are savages, Indigenous peoples are not like the rest of us, so we don't have to extend to them equality, liberty, and justice, and we can force them off their land, and we can reduce their population, and we can do all of these terrible things. That same narrative was used to justify 246 years of slavery. And I continue to believe that the great evil of slavery wasn't the forced labor, the bondage, the violence, the cruelty. That was horrific. I think the greatest evil of slavery was the narrative that was created to justify enslavement. Because people who enslaved other people didn't want to think of themselves as immoral or indecent or unchristian. And how do you think of yourself as a decent person when you see mothers being pulled away from their screaming children, knowing those mothers will never see those children again because you chose to sell them? How do you think of yourself as decent when you see the cruelty and the violence? Well, you need a narrative. And we created a false narrative that Black people aren't as good as white people.
It's not a narrative of racial difference. It's a narrative of racial superiority. So it's fine to be different. In fact, we want diversity of thought, of education, of perspective. We want differences to help us collectively be better. What we don't want is a level of superiority where I look down on you, Grace, because you're just a woman. Or I look down on you, Tony, because you're an East Coaster. Like, is it like we're there was a narrative that was created that established a level of superiority where because I'm this, you have something I want. And in order for me to take it from you, I have to demonize you. Because if you look at even from a historical context with the Native Americans, with the Indigenous people, there's always a backstory of them coming friendly and actually being taken advantage of for their friendliness. So the bad guy, but then we try to whitewash, pun intended, the activity of the bad guy. We talked about this last week in the American Revolutionary documentary with Ken Burns. This concept of, I feel like I am superior, therefore I can infringe upon you and your rights as a human being or your rights as a executive or as a leader or as a employee is something that we are still dealing with hundreds and hundreds of years later. And that's the worst part about something like that, because it's a cancer or it's a disease that we haven't tried to cure.
Grace, what's your thoughts?
Gosh, I have a few thoughts on this, and some of them may diverge from where you are. I see things as like a very long arc, and this is a really difficult time in that very long arc. But even in the shorter arc of my lifetime, I have also seen progress. And this is a backslide that we're going through right now. So I remember being in these mostly liberal elite cities and having it not be said, but I knew it, that a lot of those white people thought they were better than me. But now I'm seeing less of those people. They're the easier ones to convert, not all, but less of them acting that way. So that is progress. It's not the big P progress that we want, but there is some progress. And I've experienced it, and I experience it day to day because I mostly talk to white women, you know, so I hear how they've changed over time. And again, I'm talking about the ones who we already thought were on our side, but I'm telling you some of them really aren't, but right. I'm seeing a few more of them favoring us than before.
Right. Well, here's the thing. So let me just give you my perspective. So why did Brian start there? Because at the end of the day, Katie's going to get into it. Really, the conversation is why DEI failed. Mm-hmm. Why did he start there? He went back centuries. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that's the issue, is that most people think that everything is instant popcorn. Okay, that this program or this initiative, I should say, don't say program, this initiative was just created just out of the blue, and that it was created to give Black people advantages and promote them and make them, you know, because they're not qualified. That's not true. So the bottom line is what happens 9 times out of 10 is that there's a history to something. And for you to get the full context of the issue or the remedy or what the challenge is, you need to back up and hear the history, right? And that's what he's starting here is, and then the key word, and you guys both said it, is the narrative. Okay, so it's not, now this may sound controversial, you know, it's and what I'm about to say, yeah, you know, slavery was barbaric, right? It was horrible, split up family, we can go on and on and on, right? But then when that ended in 1865, okay, Black people were free and they were out to do their own thing. And that, and to be fair, they were like, let bygones be bygones. And they went out and they started making stuff happen. And we can give a million examples of that, right? But when you create a narrative that these people are inferior and you keep with that narrative, you can't, that's hard to shake.
Right.
And so that lasts longer. Than the slavery part. You see my point? Because now, even those generations after slavery, after this, what have they been? Their grandpa, great grandma, great grandpa, great, 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 they're telling those, their kids, these people was weak. They're beneath us, even though we're not in bondage. So when you create that narrative and you keep it going, which we're going to dive into the next clip and he's going to talk about it. Then all of a sudden, it does more damage from a long-term standpoint, right, than anything else. And people are like, what are you talking about? You kidding me? No, I'm not kidding you, because it and what we just got finished, when we kicked this episode off, we talked about narrative. That's not true. Go ahead, Chris.
Another narrative. And Grace spoke of this, and it was the narrative of progress. So imagine this. You're in a dark room, and it's a large room, and it's pitch black, and somebody lights a lighter or a match. That is progress. But we have electric capabilities. We have the ability to illuminate the entire room, and because we know that, I'm not going to accept that lighter as progress. And unfortunately, we've been told that since we're not getting whipped, since we're not currently getting beat, since we're not currently making 30 cents to the dollar, since we're not,
blah, blah, or people are not saying better. An N-word in front of your face, right? Yeah. Or because you became a judge, or you because you're a lawyer, that there's progress.
Or the president
progress.
Was black. Or right. The president was black, and so everything is absolved.
Everything is great now.
We
right?
know the room for improvement that exists, and that's the frustration.
Well, here's the other thing. Let me add on to this before I go to the next clip. All right, think about all the communities that we built from Rosewood, Black Wall Street, Wilmington, North Carolina, that we built on our own. Just leave us alone. Let us do our thing. And we've done those things. 33 years after slavery, Black people in Wilmington, North Carolina was thriving. They had Black congressmen. They had a bunch of stuff, right? But the point of it is that narrative never went away. So that narrative, they don't deserve that. They We're only superior. Got that. And then so what? They use that narrative to destroy that.
That's correct.
That's the issue. So the narrative will always keep going forward, because even when you do your own thing, there's people looking like they don't deserve that. They're more importantly, it's not even they don't deserve it. Is that how can I live with myself when I've been taught that I'm better than them?
Yep.
They should be wiping my boots, blah, 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 blah. And then when you see my point here, and so that creates a sense of entitlement, a sense of I'm better, and I should always have more than them. And if I don't have more than them, or I'm not making it, not based on what they're doing, just based on my lack of doing, then I got to do something about it. And that's where violence comes in, this and that, because of that narrative. Right. So let's keep moving.
War. The North won the Civil War, but the South won the narrative war, because after the Civil War, even our commitment to use law to protect formerly enslaved people failed. The 14th Amendment, which guaranteed equal protection to formerly enslaved people, the 15th Amendment, which guaranteed the right to vote, were quickly abandoned by our U.S. Supreme Court and other court legal institutions who sided with states' rights over the U.S. Constitution. And that's what led to that century of violence and lynching. It's what led to Jim Crow. It's what led to racial segregation. It led to the silence about this history in our textbooks and schools. It led to bias against other immigrant groups when they came to this country, Asian people, even ethnic minorities like the Irish and the Italians were initially targeted until they adopted whiteness or adopted an identity that wasn't other, wasn't racially different.
So the reality of it is, if, and this goes back, like you said, historically, people were wrong. People were wrong about Native Americans being savages and unintelligent. They were wrong about Black folks being savages and everything is the savage, unintelligent. We got to culture them. We got to capture them. We got to bring them up. You know what I'm saying? Give them the king's English and the king's religion and all this
right,
stuff.
Right. We got to make them like us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. a little bit. Because if they get too much like us, see, we don't want them taking our jobs. And if she got that role, it was because of nefarious and illicit things that she must
because
have done.
Because they're not as good as us.
She's not as good as
that,
us.
That narrative, right?
I think it comes from the fact that if I accept what I'm seeing with my lying eyes, then my daddy and my granddaddy was wrong. And I'd be damned if my daddy and my granddaddy was wrong about these people, those folks. So I'm going to keep the lie going in honor of the heritage that I, you know, grasped to, where my dad or my granddad or whoever down the lineage said, you're better than them if you
Correct.
Let them outdo, if you let her outrace you, if you let her outmath you, if you let her outdo you, you're nothing. You're a weak
you're
man.
Nothing.
You're a weak man. And that's the reality of it.
Grace?
Yeah. Again, I'm going to come in from
Look,
a different
girl,
perspective.
You got to just jump into this, right? So we don't want to be calling on you. Just jump in. Tell
okay.
us what
okay.
it is, okay?
But this is the thing. My father's father was that bigot. How did my father come to pass and marry a dark-skinned Black woman?
Uncomfortably.
Right.
Grace.
But he did
uncomfortably.
It.
But she
but
got
he
a point.
Did it.
But yeah, he did, yeah, right? Yeah. Right, right, right.
And yeah, he did yeah, it yeah. without, and he found a community of people who did it, and he moved culture forward. And I am that culture moved forward. So I know it does move forward, even though it's not great. And there's some backsliding right now. But again, my father would always say, look at the longer arc of things. In California, gay marriage passed. Then it was repealed. He said, wait a minute, just watch. And sure enough, a few years later, it was the law of the land. So that he had that longer view because he was old, you know, and he had been seeing things come and go for a long time. We're in one of those backslides right now, but the game is not over.
Of course it's not over. But here's the thing, though. And what you, I don't want to say, so let me take the word but out. Let me say and. So it's not over. And. Okay, it's this. So I'm just going about this. In 1897, I'm just going to use this as an example. When Wilmington, North Carolina was thriving.
Yeah.
Okay, and when they had a multiracial government, and then you had a lot of Black people, not just one or two, a lot that were holding political office, not just in the city, but also in the state of North Carolina. Okay, and so they were prospering. Right. And then we know what happened to them because people got jealous. And then so but my point I'm trying to make is that was a backslide.
Sure
okay?
was.
So
a
then
bad
it was
one.
All wiped out. Well, so yeah. then you went from and what was the number? I think 96,000 or 90 something thousand people, Black people that were registered to vote. Mm-hmm. And then within a year that went down to 4,000.
That's right.
All right. Because
terrible.
They wiped them out.
That's terrible.
It's by
but
design.
That doesn't mean you ever stop trying. That's
no, no,
why
no, no,
my
no.
mother
You're
wrote
100%.
On her deathbed to her congressman. You know,
no,
she was
no.
till the last day, you keep going.
You keep going. So what I'm saying is I'm not disagreeing with that. But what I'm saying is we've had a bunch of backslides.
Sure
so so that's the issue here, right? Is that you have a bunch of back. So people look at this today like, oh, we're going backwards. Well, it ain't the first time. And what's the trigger? What's the trigger? Let me ask you guys a question. What's the trigger? Then we start going backwards.
People
well,
get uncomfortable.
Because we're succeeding. We start succeeding.
We start succeeding. And
but
because
he's
we
still
start
a judge. He's still a judge. I was in front of the Supreme Court.
I totally get
can't
it.
Can't take I that totally, away.
So here's the thing, though. So that's like. So, but I hear your point. The only thing I would say is yes. Okay, we've made Chris just established that. He just said, hey, we got more progress in this and that, but we can't just sit back and say, well, look, again, they're not calling you the N-word in your face, so that's progress. No. Or you know what? You're not you're a judge now, so you should be happy, but we can treat you any way we want to treat you. That's not being satisfied with, in my opinion, real progress is equality. Okay, is treating people
there.
The same.
We are not there.
So that's the issue. Go ahead, Chris.
Let me say this. I know that based on the testimony that Grace's father and Grace's mother were strong people. We know based on the math that the majority of people aren't strong. So the concept of, okay, we're all married. We're not trying to be on the right side of history. We're trying to be on the right side of Tuesday. Like we
correct. We just try to live our lives, right? We don't want to hear about one day. You know, we've been singing
one day,
that
my
song.
Wife will appreciate.
What was the song? What was the song we were singing back in the Civil Rights Movement? We've been singing.
We shall overcome.
We shall overcome someday.
We've been singing that for look. At some point, when do we overcome? All right. Absolutely. And it's not based on our lack of work or our lack of desire, or to your point, Grace, and that's what I'm saying, our lack of continue to keep rising regardless of the resistance. Okay. So we with you on that. But at the end of the day, when does that stop? Okay, and so that's where we want to get to when we talk about DEI. But let's keep rolling. So I want to dive into, because we're talking about cultural narratives.
Yep. What conditioning?
The cultural conditioning, that's exactly right. And so for the last 60 and 70 years, we've been continuing to experience those harms. And when women and people of color got into the workforce, got into places they had historically been excluded, and they outperform their white male counterparts, they should have been promoted, they should have been celebrated. But because of these narratives, we didn't trust women and people of color to have the leadership positions they deserve because they were more skilled, and we denied them those opportunities. And so then we began to realize that that wasn't right. That wasn't fair. And that was the genesis behind DEI. That's when we started to say, oh, you know what? It's wrong to not put the most skilled person in the position of leadership just because she's a woman or because this person is Black or brown. And that was an effort to begin repairing the harm that is connected to this narrative of racial difference.
The issue is this, unfortunately, when a woman or a Black person starts to outperform, the white male person that's in charge take that as a badge of them being a good foreman. Like the reason why they're so great is because I put them in a position to be great. You know what I mean? And it's hard to get them to be realistic or to diminish their audacity or their ego in the sense of you becoming their competition or inevitably their boss. Why would somebody rationally put you in a position of superiority when they've been taught for centuries that they are naturally and organically superior? So once again, we talk about the history of this and how this perpetuated throughout the times. We're in a point now where it's hard for me to imagine going into a place and nobody white is in charge. It's hard for me to imagine going, you know what I'm saying? Like all the teachers, all of that, like this is just the way it is. And unfortunately, is subsets of society where we just accept it. We just understand it. I'll say this, and this is absolutely not gonna be popular. It is very hard to find a non-Western Indian doctor because that's just the way now. Like I don't trust Black doctors because so many doctors are Indians. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know about that, bro. I appreciate your doctor, you being vulnerable.
Is your doctor Indian?
Mine is not.
I might have to pull up the data for y'all.
You may need to come out of Dallas, right?
Yeah, so, that's true too.
But I hear your point. So look, you're 100% right. I don't know about the doctor part, but I hear your point in terms of the conditioning ourselves, okay? That we're conditioned based on a bunch of narratives. Let me give you an example. Right. And I'm not saying from a condition standpoint, but let me give you an example. You know, years ago, I was in the military, right? And I remember when I got out, I worked at this factory for like a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was this white girl. I forget her name. She was in the Army too, okay? And we were hanging out. We went over, you know, hang out over our coworker's house. We were hanging out, drinking, and this and that. And this wasn't said to me. It was somebody told me about it later, right? So they were outside chatting, and she was talking about her experience in the Army, right? And when she went in the military, she went to the Army, she had a guy who was a sergeant. He was a black guy, okay? And he was her boss, right? And she was telling these people, like, she didn't like that because he shouldn't have been her boss, okay? Because he was black, okay? And she had a hard time dealing with that. So think about that for a second. This is the point we're trying to make. That didn't come up because she just joked. That was, she was breaded on a narrative, okay? That these people are inferior, okay? So even though this person was probably in before her and became a sergeant, blah, blah, blah. In her mind, I shouldn't have to report to him, all right, because yep. he's black. And that's the issue. So what Brian is talking about here, and this is why we wanted to dive in this, because he talked about from a corporate America standpoint, that the narrative didn't just stop in 1865. It didn't stop in 1898. It didn't stop in 1940. It didn't stop. As black people started going to corporate America and started working, that narrative was ahead of them. Right. And so at the end of the day, we knew that we had to come in, work twice as hard, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of times we were overlooked for promotions. We were overlooked for getting the job, even though we were the best, because of the conditional narrative that was pushed out.
This conditional narrative, though, is not just relegated to a superiority complex of white folks. Let me give you a real story that happened a month and a week ago. One of my former employees, a brother, came and said, hey, I just want to let you know I'm doing great at this company. I'm actually up for a promotion. Put in for it. Everything is looking good, but I probably won't get it. But I'm realizing everything that you put into me, blah, blah, blah. And I said, what is the reason why you feel like you won't get it? And he was like, oh, well, it's a white chick that put in for it too. Okay, so what qualifications? Like, he had stopped right there, hard stop. It was a white chick that put in for it too. He's a brother. She's white. Hard stop. What qualifications?
Because that's enough said. That's enough said.
He right? had already established, I'm probably not going to get it. I'm happy
Flat
to
out.
Be nominated.
Yeah. Flat
I'm just out. Happy to be nominated because the way things go generally. Now he ended up getting it because I reinforced these are the deltas between your career and her career. Army veteran, blah, blah, blah. Like, he has so much going for himself, and he was great at the job. But he had no idea what she had done, where she was from, nothing. What he knew, she was a blonde chick, and she was probably going to get it. So it's not just them perpetuating these stereotypes or these narratives. We collectively as a society tend to allow for this proliferation of this perpetuation of a stereotype. What say you,
Grace? Yeah, we do. We do, because it's true, because we know that happens a lot of the time. And sometimes it doesn't. And I don't let it stop me, but I do think it in my head. Absolutely. Because a certain percentage of the time, it does happen that way. And that's a shame. You know, maybe that's my mixed head, you know, where I was raised in white culture and I always know, oh, okay, I got to maneuver around these white people in a certain kind of way. But, you know, it's in our head for sure.
Well, let me hold on for a second. Let's stop right there. I want to ask you a question on that, right? Mm-hmm. You said you grew up in white culture, okay? So in being in white culture, did you ever think, you have a sister too, right? Did you ever think growing up that when you were in school or when you went to college or, you know, you got your first job that you had to work twice as hard as everybody else to get ahead? Did you hear that? Did you hear negativity from some of your white colleagues and friends? Talk a little bit about that.
I didn't, because certain choices were made for us. We went to college in New York City because my parents knew that was going to be a safer place for us than going to Florida, you know? So like we were positioned into what's going to be easier for you. It was table stakes that things aren't going to be equal. So let's make it work better, you know? And that's what we did, right? So definitely I have felt that many times. And I think it sometimes still today, I didn't get that because, right? In fact, I did it recently. And then I found out a darker skinned Black woman got that job. You know, I got to call myself on that. I was like, oh.
I can't believe it. Okay. They hired you, right? Well, here's the thing, though. And we talked about this last week, and I keep going to this flick, Cry Freedom, that Denzel Washington made about Stephen Biko. He didn't make it, but he was in it. Stephen Biko, South African activist who got assassinated by the South African government. Kevin Kline, great movie. Awesome. I recommend that anybody watch it. But he, in that flick, he brought that up. He, you know, he was like, look, he said, the greatest, he said, you're great. He was talking to Kevin Kline. And he said, look, you know, from a white person's perspective is, if it ain't white, it ain't right. I'm just paraphrasing, right? Mm-hmm. But the point he said is something I keep bringing up. He said, but your greatest genius is you convinced us of that as well. Correct. Okay. And so that narrative just doesn't go to white people. That narrative goes to Black people, right? And so you doubt, you don't think, you go, I don't know, they're gonna give it to me, blah blah blah. Nobody told you that, but at the end of the day, that's basically what we deal with, right? But here, Chris, I want to go to this before we play the next clip. There's people online saying, you must be right. It was like, Sean says my doctor was Indian, right? And then Gail, she said, she was like, Chris, that's a good point. My doctor is Indian. I mean, okay, maybe. Mine's not, but okay. All
congratulations,
right.
Sir. Congratulations.
But here's the thing, though. I want to put up here what Sal says. Number one, thank you guys for your comments. But Sal says, Sal, counter with universal value, reiterate that true DEI aims for equality and fairness for all, reducing prejudice and creating it. And Sal, so that's an excellent point, right? And that's what we're going to play in our next clip. The challenge is most people didn't know that.
Right.
They thought DEI was created. Again, the narrative. They mm-hmm. thought that DEI was creative just to give Black people or women something free that they didn't deserve, right? And so that's, and the majority of people, and this is why I really appreciate what Brian Stevens is talking about, because he could have came on and just said that, okay? But he didn't. He came on to paint the narrative, the history, right? Yeah. Because without the history, you don't have context. So let's keep it moving.
Cool.
I think, Brian, a lot of people thought, well, don't put the less skilled person just because they are a minority in that position. I think that's how so many people interpreted DEI efforts.
That's right. And I think we have to fault the corporate bodies and the institutions that started implementing these policies, because what they should have said is, we have done wrong. We've had lots of women in our workforce. We've had lots of people of color in our workforce who were more skilled, and yet they were passed over for promotion. They weren't given leadership opportunities because of their race, because of their gender. We made that mistake. We did something wrong. And now we're going to repair that by committing to correcting that cultural conditioning. But they didn't want to admit that they had done things in a bad way. They didn't want to confront, they didn't want to embrace the wrong, they didn't want to say we backed it poorly. Like, that is the consequence of corporate institutions not saying, we failed, we did something wrong, we did discriminate, we did not give the most skilled person the job because of their gender and their race, and now we're going to commit to doing that. And so instead of it being presented as a gimme to unqualified, less skilled people because of their race and gender, it was actually a remedy for harm that was done to people because of their race and gender. And we don't like owning up to the mistakes we made.
So once again, he's not going to say his daddy and his granddaddy was wrong in how they built this company. But when he said, give them the job, I think he's wrong. It was give them the opportunity. Let me quickly state the Rooney Rule in NFL football. The Rooney Rule stated a long time ago that if you had a job position open, a minority candidate had to be interviewed, not hired, not put into the position, but damn it, at least interview them and give them a chance. We weren't even getting a chance, right? And the longest tenured coach that's never had a losing record in the NFL is a brother because of the Rooney Rule. So in these instances, we're not asking for a handout, and we're not talking about people getting hands out or getting opportunities. We just want opportunities to be included in the conversation or in the room. So what Brian was speaking of was these things were set up not to give people jobs, but to give them interviews.
Well, and give them interviews, but also, so yeah, give them interviews, but also promote the people that deserve to be promoted, okay? Right. I mean, that was his other point, right? There's, let's be fair. Grace, let me ask you a question. You are a senior level executive,
yeah.
Okay? Let's be fair, okay? You are a senior level executive at several major companies in the fashion industry. So let me ask you this. Did everybody, and again, you've seen it. I know I've seen it, but I want to hear your experience. What was your experience? Experience when you when it came to promotions and stuff to that, when it came to people of color and stuff of that nature?
I mean, I was the only one, so it was me. I was the promotion.
Wait, how many people were in the company? How many people were in the company?
I mean, sometimes thousands, you know.
Okay. All right. And wait, hold on. I gotta ask you this, right? Because let's put this in context. Were you the only Black person or Black person that that you've seen or that was in the company that was promotable?
Yes.
Did you see other people?
Go ahead, say your thought. I'm sorry. Because there wasn't anyone else even trying to get into these positions. It just wasn't a thing.
When you say wasn't trying, like, what do you mean?
Because it's a white girl profession. Even the colors of the clothes. You know, even the colors of the clothes go on white, light skin tones.
Right.
Hold on a second. But how do you know people didn't try to interview for the jobs and stuff to that nature?
I mean, I know from my time and from managing people, like, I can count on one hand the Black people.
Okay, so there were some other Black people there, right?
Yep.
Not at
one
level.
Hand, I get it. Yeah, but not at your level, correct, right?
Right. One I know made it to that level, got knocked out and kind of just fell off the face of the earth, didn't recover. And then, I mean, another one worked for me as a designer. Like, literally, I know them, I can name them. You know, it's that few.
Well, you spoke about the one on the show that worked her butt off.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Because I remember when you spoke about it, you said she worked her butt off.
And made it to a VP level.
And made it to a level. And then what happened?
So she and a white designer, they kind of teamed together. Sometimes that happens. They both got to the level. He did the men's, she did the women's. They both got laid off for the same reason. He continued his career. She fell down and never could get up again.
Oh.
Because it did her head in so much, right? That's what it means to us.
Also the system existed. To where you can get, we know we only got one shot at this.
And that's
they can fail up. They can fail up. They can fail up.
It was like, let's be fair here, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that how many shots you going to get, right? When you go through, when you jump through these hoops to get these roles, let's be fair. Number one, you didn't just walk in and say, hey, welcome. Come on in. We've been waiting for you. You had to jump through multiple hoops.
Right.
Okay. To be fair. Right. And now you build up a reputation. You become really good and you start working yourself up the ranks. Right. And then for whatever reason, you get laid off, whatever. Is it that easy? So think about this, hoops you had to jump through to get this one job.
Right.
Now you got to start all over. Okay. It's not as easy to get that job again. It's just not.
It isn't. Sometimes, and I'm gonna out myself. I've wondered, am I the DEI hire? You know, right. I've actually wondered that places, because I worked at some really Republican companies. You know, and that's kind of maybe what they were thinking. I don't know.
So hold on one second. When you were wondering, were you the DEI hire? Like, what years was this?
I'm going to go early mid-2000s.
Okay. So DEI wasn't even out then.
Yeah, but still, it was in my head.
But in your head, you thought, am I a token, right?
Yes.
Am I a token?
Yeah. The word was
right?
So that's different.
That's different. See, this is where this is what I'm talking about, narratives, right? Now DEI goes all the way back to 2001. when it didn't. It wasn't even invented then, right? And so this is where people, you know, now the Black pilot is not qualified.
Right.
Okay. But he's been a pilot for 20 years. Right. See what I'm saying? So that's where we are when we talk about this narrative. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was just saying, you said it, Tony, that narrative of us not being capable, but the construct is, Grace, you talked about your parents were wise enough to give you the cheat code or the Underground Railroad of corporate to know, navigate these roads, because this is the safest way to go for you. You know what I mean? But the concept is, I've been at large companies, many Fortune 500 companies, where some had systems or programs in place, and you looked around and realized people that were being plucked were not people like you. It were like the pluckers. They mm-hmm. made sure that they chose people who emulated or imitated yeah. them to the closest degree. And those were the people who got these roles. The reality of DEI was saying, wait a second, if you have a program, make it an open casting call and let these people act. But right. the fact is, when you start to make it exclusive instead of inclusive, which the I is diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so the idea of being inclusive in just the audition allows for us to go and shine and show. When we don't have the ability to go and shine and show, that's where we really start feeling like this is not even made for us. And that's the disparaging part of it.
Well, here, and again, let's don't lose Brian's point, because the point is that companies didn't do the, see, what happens is leadership is not right. Mm-hmm. All right. That's why the program, so things fail from the top. Mm-hmm. So we talk about a narrative. So his point was, have the companies, the corporations been honest and said, hey, we're going to roll out this. Let's tell you why. Let's look at what he just did. He painted a narrative. He gave the history of the disparaging things that have happened, right? And then be honest and say, even in our company, to be fair, there's people here that should have got promoted, that they was actually better, and we didn't promote them because of their, just say it. That's his point. But they didn't do that. They were afraid to do that. So what they did is they threw something together. And if you don't provide the context for it, if you don't provide the history for it, and then you kind of haphazardly put something together, then people be like, what is this? And then immediately it's easy to go to, they're just doing this for them. They're actually discriminating against me. And that's the issue, is that they were uncomfortable. That's why I asked you the question, Grace, because the bottom line is this, and look, I haven't been in your industry. Chris, you and I worked together for a year or two, but to be fair, I didn't work at where you worked at. You lived in Illinois and Dallas. I've been in Michigan. Grace, you've been in New York around. So we all have, we've all been around the country, but we have the same experiences when it comes to corporate America, working in corporate America, right? And so that's why, did your company stand up and say, we got it wrong?
No.
No, not at all.
Did my company, that's the point, right? And so if you don't, we know this, Chris, you Six Sigma, if you don't roll out stuff with great communication, right? And thinking of all the different angles in terms of how people are going to think, how people are going to perceive this, all that type stuff. If you just put something together because of George Floyd murdered, and we got to jump in this because we don't want to be deemed as a racist company and this and that. So we got to do this and this and that. And then all of a sudden, then people start pushing back and you're like, oh, now we got to get rid of it, right? Without going through and taking the time to educate people on what time it is. Now, if you educate them, they still feel the same. Okay, that's on them. But at the end of the day, that didn't happen. But here's the thing. I just want to get to this last clip, and I want to hear your thoughts. Because, Grace, we're going to go back to what you were saying about progress, okay?
I went to Harvard Law School. I've got a lot of degrees and awards. I've won cases at the U.S. Supreme Court. And I've been in courtrooms representing clients, getting there early, sitting at defense counsel's table, where the judge will walk in and immediately get mad at me. The judge will look at me and say, hey, hey, you get back out there in the hallway. I don't want any defendants sitting in my courtroom without their lawyer. And I have to stand up and say, well, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I am the lawyer. I didn't introduce myself. My name is Brian Stevenson. I have to try to de-escalate this situation. And I was doing that recently. I was in a courtroom in the Midwest, and the judge started laughing, but it wasn't an apologetic laugh. And it kind of angered me. And the prosecutor started laughing. They thought it was so funny. And I was sitting there getting angry. And then I thought, oh no, Brian, you can't get angry. You need to smile. You may need to laugh. And I felt that way. I thought that way because my client was not going to be able to leave that county. I was able to leave that county and never come back based on the way I was treated if I chose to do that. But my client was going to have to stay there. So when they were laughing, I smiled. And then I eventually chuckled. Client came in, we did the hearing. But I remember sitting in my car after that hearing thinking, wow, here I am, this middle-aged black man. I'm in my best suit. I actually argued the case at the Supreme Court that we were trying to implement. I've got all of these degrees and awards, and I'm still required to laugh at my own humiliation to do justice for my client.
It wasn't until he said he was in his best suit, because I just assumed he had on a hoodie with Trayvon Martin face on it. Once again, the concept of you having to bow down or defend yourself or explain yourself, or we have been taught for so long just to survive the moment. Mm-hmm. Everybody's had to talk about when the police pull you over, right? You just survive the moment because it's not made for you to be successful. In that situation, he had talked about all previous successes that meant nothing in that moment because of how they treated him and how they viewed him. He was just, you know what I'm saying? He was a black man in a suit that was probably a rental, you know what I'm saying? But in the idea of him having the maturity to think bigger than himself and to think, I don't want to put myself in an advantageous situation that could reflect my client because he had a job to do, I applaud him for that. The fact that he had to go through it and there's nothing that can be done about it because it's going to be explained away if he pushes it. It's going to be laughed away. It's going to be, well, no, that it wasn't even about that. We know exactly what it was about, but the judge and the other lawyer would have said, he's being sensitive. He's being emotional. When you had to defend, we talked about this last week, Tony, when you had to defend yourself, when a dude called with some BS and it wasn't, this black man was being a leader and asserting himself and standing up for what was right. It was he being a hostile, bitter brother and came at me and he's making, now I'm uncomfortable. And we talked about it from the beginning. When they get uncomfortable, something, a reckoning is going to come as far as they're concerned. So our job is to always make sure that they feel comfortable despite ourselves.
That's so painful to do that. I mean, I've been there. Oh my gosh. I had a retailer look me in the eye and said, no, who really did this collection? Like it couldn't have been me.
There you go.
Before AI. This is before AI. Now they blame AI for us.
Yeah, but the point of it is that think about what he said. Mm-hmm. I have all these degrees. I went to Harvard.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I've argued in front of the Supreme Court. I've gotten convictions overturned, right? And I'm in my best suit. And this, I got to sit back and laugh at my own humiliation. And that's progress, right? So think about it. Yeah, I got a degree. Yeah, I can go to these schools. But in some people's mind, you steal the N-word. It doesn't matter what you, see, that's the issue. It doesn't matter what you've accomplished. It doesn't matter if you're a judge. It doesn't matter if you're the president, an astronaut. You're still in some people's mind is the end. What are you doing in here? That's where we are, unfortunately. And to be fair, this is why we want to go through this, is to educate people. And then, look, you may not change your perspective, and I totally get it. I don't get it, but everybody's got their right perspective. But at least understand the context of why DEI was enacted, okay? And more importantly, understand the history that which really was the reason why it was started. It's no different than affirmative action. There was a history, okay, that said, hey, we got to do this because of blah, 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 blah. And it's not, didn't fail because they were promoting or hiring people. It failed or because the leadership was afraid to tell the truth, okay, and stand by it and then push back. Because when you guys both know, you've been in court, you guys have been leaders. Grace, you've been in, at, when you guys roll out an initiative, something that the company wanted to do, and you start doing it, and if it didn't start, it didn't go 100% to plan, but you believed it, what did you do? You perfected it. Yes. You fixed it. You said, hey, we're going to take this out. This is what we learned. We did a post-mortem, and this is what we got to change, and this and that, because we believe in this, right? But when you don't believe in it, and you're just doing it to patch up stuff or to try to make sure that your company is not deemed a racist company, then it really doesn't matter because you wasn't 100% behind it at all. So final thoughts, Grace, final thoughts on this episode.
I mean, it's all true, and I'm still optimistic. I really am. Because I have to be, because that's the way I choose to live.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to live with the other reality.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Chris, final thoughts.
I wish that the other attorney in that courtroom was like Grace's dad and told him, stop. We don't do that. We don't. You know what I'm saying? He should have said stop. But it's not just the leadership, Tony. It's the other people that allow for the leadership to get away with that and laugh and go along to get along that makes this such a problem. It's somebody has to be the person that says, whoa, enough is enough. And we don't have enough of those people that are willing to do that because they're worried about their situation and their dynamics and not thinking about the team collective or the United States collective or the unity of everything. It's just that we have a me first type of society. And that's the saddest part about it all.
There's no question. But I just want to go back to what Grace said. So here's the thing, my sister. So number one, we're all, and to be fair, and we're all optimistic. We're all believe that, you know, we are hopeful things will continue to get better. We are blessed that we are in certain areas and we have had some type of progress, right? The one thing though we can't forget is that we also got to keep calling it out, right? Oh, yeah. We have to speak it out, right? So yeah, we don't, this is not doomsday. This is not the woe is me, the world is over. Of course not. None of our people have never done that. Okay, that's how we continue to move forward. And while we move forward, and you both just said it, is that as we start rising, these things come up. So that's the issue, is that we can always continue to move forward. But we got to be honest and say what time it is, because we can't let other people write our narrative and sit back and then just take it. Right.
So, yeah. And to circle back, that's my podcast, right? Because no one's listening to the mixed people, right? We got a lot of things that both sides don't know about that we're listening to. And I think getting that out there is what's important.
You just did my promo. I love it. All right. So don't forget to check out January 14th here on a Black Executive Perspective podcast, a mixed executive perspective by our sister, Grace Food and Corey, I'm sorry. And we're looking forward. We're so excited about what you're doing, what you're willing to do. And more importantly, the courage, because you didn't have to do this, right? And for you willing to share, to educate and help other people is fabulous. So everyone, please make sure that you check out January 14th here on the Black Executive Perspective podcast, a mixed executive perspective.
Make sure that you chime in and tune in, because we'll be promoting this and you want to make sure you put the notify button on there. Make sure you like this episode, subscribe to what we have going on here. But when we talk about not being silent and making sure we speak our voices, the place that we do that most so far is Need to Know with Nasinka. Tune in weekly to listen to Dr. Nasinka Burton not be quiet about damn near everything. We have this show on a Black Executive Perspective podcast ecosystem where she dives into the timely and crucial topics that shape our community and our world, and she's extremely deep. And Dr. Burton is one who will not hold her tongue, and you're going to love it, so you don't want to miss it.
Absolutely. And actually, I think it's next week, we have the year in review coming out with Need to Know with Dr. Nasinga Burton. So you guys got to check this out. So you guys are going to get little snippets of Dr. Burton throughout 2025. So definitely check that out. And I'm pretty sure if you watch that, listen to that, if you're not subscribing, you definitely going to start subscribing after that. But the other thing we want to remind everybody is check out Pull Up Speak Up here on the Black Executive Perspective Podcast. That's where our roundtable sit down, have open and honest conversations like we had today about hot button topic issues, very raw, very real, everyone sharing their perspective. So don't forget to check out the next Pull Up Speak Up here on the Black Executive Perspective Podcast.
Just one more time, Tony, just for the people in the back row, tell us when the Mixed Executive Perspective Podcast is going to drop.
January 14th here on a Black Executive Perspective Podcast. Don't forget to check it out. My girl Grace is going to kick some serious butt. But more importantly, you're going to hear her stories. And the thing about it, she's going to share love, and she's really about educating people to bring people together. But more importantly, to understand that their life, no matter what color, if they're biracial, whatever, is strong. It means something as well. And she's going to provide her background to be able to share that.
There's absolutely connection there. And we want to make sure that we educate you by establishing our goal to eliminate all forms of discrimination. And to achieve this, we ask you to embrace less, L-E-S-S. The L is for learn. Educate yourself on social, cultural, historical nuances, wherever you can.
Absolutely. And then after you learn, you have the letter E, which stands for empathy. Now, since you've learned about new people, new racial, cultural nuances, now you can be more empathetic because you can put yourself in their shoes.
And then the first S stands for share. Don't hide it, divide it. Make sure the things that you pick up and learn that actually resonate with you, you go out and preach that gospel and make sure other people know that so they can be better collectively as well.
Absolutely. And the final S stands for stop. We want everyone to stop discrimination as it walks in your path. Let's stop that narrative, right? So it's as simple as if Aunt Jenny or Uncle Joe says something that's inappropriate at the Thanksgiving, Sunday dinner table, Friday night lights, wherever, instead of giggling or having your mouth open, like, I can't believe they said that, you sit back and say, Aunt Jenny, Uncle Joe, we don't believe that. We don't say that. And you stop it right there. So if everyone who's listening and watching this can incorporate less, L-E-S-S, we'll build a more fair, more understanding world. And we all will see the change that we want to see because less will become more.
Thank you for tuning into this live. We love doing the live. We love you commenting. Thank you, Sal, for showing up. Appreciate you. Gail said something. Other people who said something.
Sean,
I apologize. I can't remember. Sean, okay, thank you. But make sure you come in and interact with us because this is an interactive platform, and we love it that way. But we want you to also go to the website, sign up for the newsletter, The Monthly Perspective. Check that out. It's giving you game on top of game on top of game. And then make sure that you leave a review and continue to comment on this. Once you like it, go ahead and put your comment of things that may have come to you after the fact. But then go ahead and subscribe wherever you are listening to us besides this live. Where can they find us, Tony?
My friend, you can find a Black Executive Perspective Podcast right here on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on our social channels of LinkedIn, X, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at a Black Exec. I want to thank our new partner, Grace Food and Carry, Corey, all right, Mixed Executive Perspective Podcast for joining BEP Live. I want to thank the co-host with the most, my boy down in Dallas, Crispy Reed. I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We learned about it. We kind of fought about it, but we can continue to strive and thrive about it. We love you, and guess what? We're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.